This is The Guardian.
Today, as members meet for their annual conference in Aberdeen, the Scottish National Party has a new leader and a new strategy for independence.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Back in 2014, when 45% of Scottish voters said yes to independence, the prospect of breaking from the United Kingdom felt closer than ever before.
But above all, thank you to Scotland for 1.6 million votes for Scottish independence.
A landslide victory for the Scottish National Party the following year built on that momentum, and a second referendum on the question of independence seemed almost inevitable. It was just a matter of time.
So I can confirm today that next week I will seek the procedure that will enable the Scottish Parliament to legislate for an independence referendum.
But in recent years, things have taken a turn for the SNP. Two of the party's former leaders, Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon, have been embroiled in scandals for which they deny any wrongdoing. Nonetheless, voters are switching off, and the party's popularity and its dominance of Scottish politics is starting to wane.
Labour excitement hasn't subsided. They've doubled their MPs in Scotland from 1 to 2 with a huge win over the SNP.
Certainly the mood in Aberdeen this weekend has been, understandably, I think, a lot more muted than previous conferences I've attended. There has been this big debate on independence strategy, but activists are really sort of asking about how that impacts on their day-to-day campaigning. Is it too complicated to explain to punters on the doorstep? Where are the clear answers on the economic case for independence?
The First Minister, Humza Yousaf, has a momentous job on his hands. With the SNP conference entering its final day, can the young, new leader convince people that his party is still relevant? And can he chart a viable path to an independent Scotland?
I think we need to be prepared for the likely scenario where Keir Starmer or Rishi Sunak turns around and just goes, no, we don't care. You had your chance in 2014. You have to wait another 10, 20, 30 years before we're going to, deign to let you. And we can't wait that long.
From The Guardian, I'm Nasheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, can the Scottish National Party keep its dream of independence alive? Libby Brooks, you're The Guardian Scotland correspondent, and you're in Aberdeen this week for the SNP's party conference, which began in relatively difficult circumstances because they're fresh from this thumping defeat at the Rutherglen and Hamilton West by-election at the hands of Labour. What impact has that had on party confidence?
Yes, I mean, it's fair to say it has not been a vintage week, month, 6 months for the SNP. Certainly that defeat in Rutherglen and Hamilton West, that 20-point swing from the SNP to Labour this time, really expectation-defying for Labour strategists themselves.
Scottish Labour Party, 17,840.
Minutes later came confirmation that Mr. Shanks had overturned an SNP majority of more than 5,000 into a Labour majority approaching 10,000, with a massive swing of more than 20%.
And I think what was very, very clear from that was that the SNP was not meeting voters where their concerns are, which are all around the cost of living crisis currently. And a lot of SNP voters on that day didn't come out, and others were sort of much more convinced by Labour's message that they would be able to deal with cost of living issues at Westminster.
Well, Libby, as you said, it's been a really bruising time for the SNP. And just days before conference, the MP, Lisa Cameron, defected to, of all parties, the Conservatives. What happened there?
She cited a toxic atmosphere within the SNP's Westminster group, said she'd experienced fear and intimidation while she was working there. As she said, that got worse when she stood up for the teenage victim of unwanted sexual advances from the SNP MP Patrick Grady. And she also said that she changed her view on independence and that she no longer felt that the Scottish government was being run competently.
And how did the party generally respond to Cameron's defection?
Well, I was actually speaking to SNP leader Hamza Youssef just a few hours after that defection was announced, and he described it to me as the least surprising news he'd had in his time as First Minister. Lisa Cameron herself, I think, had been, you know, facing a selection contest in her seat, and it was looking likely that she was going to lose that. And so she had certainly been sort of hinting very strongly that she was considering life outside of Westminster.
And of course, it's all swirling around against the backdrop of that long-running investigation into the SNP's finances, which saw the arrest of former First Minister Nicola Sturgeon and her husband Peter Murrell, the party's former chief executive. Libby, where are we with that story, and how has it dominated Hamza Youssef's leadership?
All we know about that investigation still is in fact sort of how little we know. It is still continuing. The police are still investigating these concerns that have been raised about SNP finances. We don't have any sense at the moment of when charges will be brought, what those charges might include. But obviously, that was a huge shock when three senior figures in the SNP, including the former SNP Treasurer Colin Beattie, were arrested earlier this year. And it has cast a very dark shadow over Youssef's leadership.
Well, we should say that Beattie, Morrill and Sturgeon all deny any wrongdoing at all. And of course, there may not be anyone charged. But all of this is a problem for the SNP. Even before we begin talking about the centrepiece of this party conference, which is a chance to agree a new strategy for achieving Scottish independence. How has that played out over the last few days?
What was agreed on Sunday was that should the SNP win a majority of parliamentary seats in the next general election, this will be a trigger for Hamza Youssef to open negotiations with Westminster about independence for Scotland.
And what does a majority of seats look like? And how does this change from the existing strategy? Could you explain it to me a bit step by step?
Well, a majority of seats will look like at least 29 of them. After the boundary reviews, Scotland's common seats have gone down from 59 to 57. So therefore, a majority will be at least 29 seats. It is different from the de facto referendum proposal which Nicola Sturgeon put forward after, if you recall, the Supreme Court basically ruled that Holyrood did not have the powers to hold a second independence referendum without being granted those by Westminster. And so It is a sort of significant difference from that, because her de facto referendum idea was based on a majority of votes in the next general election, and this is about the majority of seats.
But Libby, it is widely expected that the SNP will lose seats at the next election. Maybe a lot of seats if that recent by-election is any guide. And yet, as you said, the debate this week is how to interpret what will probably be a lot of those seats as a mandate for a new referendum on Scottish independence, which might seem strange to a lot of people.
This is a real contradiction because on the one hand, this motion is saying we are going to put independence front and centre of our general election campaign. On the other hand, the lesson from Rutherglen is that even those who previously voted for independence in 2014 have other sharper concerns now around cost of living crisis.
Well, how fierce has that debate been within the hall in Aberdeen?
There certainly were a number of criticisms, you know, made in the conference hall. I think my particular favourite was the delegate who stood up and said that he thought that the entire proposition was like flatulence in a trance. There certainly were a lot of different perspectives aired during that debate. And I think what is really worth remembering too is that this is the first time that the SNP has debated independence on the main floor of their conference. As far as I can recall, since I think 2015.
Votes only apply if you wish to regard next year's general election as a referendum on Scottish independence. If that is your view, then yes, it should be a majority of votes rather than seats. And that is the crux of this debate. But it is not a referendum. It is a general election, not a.
So this has been the first kind of big independence strategy debate. There have been calls from it constantly, so over the years, but this was something that Nicola Sturgeon, under her leadership, just would not allow. And so that's what I really noticed afterwards, was that actually I think people got a real fillip just from being able to have that discussion in the open, even if it did end up being fairly vanilla in the sense that you sort of headed off these concerns by accepting particular amendments. Simply the fact of coming together as a party and having that debate, I think, really, really galvanised the membership. And I think I certainly sort of heard that from people that I spoke to as they were coming out of the hall afterwards.
There hasn't been an independence debate on the floor of confidence for a number of years now. So did that just sort of feel like sort of quite liberating in itself, just to be able to have that conversation in the...
Very much so. And I think we're at the beginning of something very positive, actually. Yeah. I feel very positive at the end of that.
I think that was a relatively healthy debate, but I do feel like our point was probably heard. And I think we probably woke people up a bit. And I think, like,
all of that said, though, when you spoke to Hamza Yousif, he did admit that support for the SNP is falling, even though support for independence has remained pretty steady. How did he account for that?
I think Hamza Yousif is very clear now that the critical mistake in Rutherglen was that failure to link independence with the cost of living crisis. And that is his message. It was certainly his message during that independence debate as well. After this, draw a line, get on with convincing people that independence is the way out of the cost of living crisis. And I think that will certainly be his message in the leader's speech that he is making to conference later on Tuesday. Is really finding a way to connect those two issues together. In a way, you could argue that part of this is about the SNP becoming almost a victim of its own success. You know, I remember around, you know, sort of 2014 and afterwards, all of those billboards saying independence is normal. That was a strategy to normalise independence. And I think you now have a generation of voters for whom independence is so normal. It is something that they want, but they don't have that sort of immediate sort of desperation to have it sort of right now, have a referendum yesterday, because they feel that it is something that is, you know, coming down the track, and they would rather wait for a moment where they feel that a referendum is going to be sort of very successful and carry the majority of the country with them, because they're so aware of of the really sort of horrible splits that were created by Brexit. And meanwhile, they just feel that they have sort of far more immediate concerns around paying their mortgages, paying their heating bills, putting food on the table.
Libby, this conference was Hamza Yousaf's first as First Minister and his opportunity to reset and boost the party. He has, you know, as we've discussed, been under a lot of pressure since that by-election result. When you spoke to him, how confident did he seem?
I mean, if I'm honest, when I spoke to him, he struck me as a man who was sort of really struggling to keep a lot of different things in mind at the same time. You will know that his in-laws are currently under Israeli bombardment in Gaza. And we spoke about that at length, actually, during the interview. There's a real awareness amongst membership that Yousaf and his family have got, some very sort of tough things to deal with at the moment. In terms of how he is feeling about the next general election, I think he's really aware that he needs not only to give former SNP voters a reason to come out on the day and vote for the SNP again, but he also needs to give SNP activists a reason to get up and to campaign for the party again.
Yes, you're right. I mean, look, the party has had a difficult 6 months. Heads have been down. I need to try to make sure those heads go back up.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, I mean, I'm not fatalistic at all about our chances of doing an election, quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. I believe that we can, you know, we are coming with credibility and we're coming with policies. The more and more Keir Starmer lurches to the right, triangulates with the Conservative Party, I'm not sure that people will buy his message of change.
Libby, as you mentioned there, he has spent the last 11 days dealing with that really distressing personal issue of his mother and father-in-law being trapped in Gaza. But he's also at the same time, as you've said, required as a national leader to address the conflict as First Minister of Scotland. How is he handling that, and how is public perception of how he's dealing with that situation?
I think there is a sense that he has handled it very well, that he has been talking, you know, openly and honestly about his grave concerns for his family in Gaza. But at the same time, he's been using the platform that he has to challenge the international community, call for that humanitarian corridor to let food and supplies in and people come out of Gaza now.
It was another rough night, as you'd expect. She feels the bombing, there was a lot of bombing in their neighbourhood. The real worry for them is not just the airstrikes that continue to happen, but the fact they're running really low on supplies. So mother-in-law this morning said they only have a few plastic bottles of clean water, drinking water left. And our family in Gaza, our Manari's family in Gaza, are ones who are, you know, by Gazan standards, well off. And they are down to their last few bottles of drinking water, and there's no water supplies, fuel supplies, any food coming in to Gaza. So we're deeply worried about not just my in-laws, but there's four children in the house. One of them is only 2 months old.
There is a sense that he has been very dignified and statesmanlike during what is a sort of unimaginably stressful time for his family personally. He's reached out across faith communities. There was actually a really lovely photo of him embracing the mother of Bernard Cowan, one of the victims of Hamas, at a synagogue in Glasgow. And he has used his platform to consistently call for this humanitarian corridor to allow supplies and food into Gaza and to allow to leave the area that's currently under fire.
Coming up, can Hamza Yousaf and the SNP reconnect with Scottish voters?
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Libby, you've spent a few days in Aberdeen among the party faithful. Does this still seem like an SNP that's confident in itself?
I think it feels like an SNP that is perhaps more willing to challenge itself than it has been previously. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think there is also an awareness that the SNP needs to find a different way of speaking to voters. I was really struck in the interview that Yusuf did with me that he was saying, you know, we can't just spend our time explaining Westminster's failings, and we can't just spend our time pointing to good things that we've done in the past. And he is certainly very keen to find a way to convince voters in the here and now that SNP competence remains strong. It was, you know, always seen, the Scottish Government, and particularly Nicola Sturgeon herself as leader, always seen as very competent and able across, you know, all public services, you know, almost kind of unassailable or infallible. And that really has changed now.
Well, yesterday, Nicola Sturgeon did make an appearance in the conference hall, and she gave her full backing to the new independent strategy. She was widely cheered on. She's obviously still very popular with the members. But the party is struggling now, and Humza Yousaf is due to deliver his first conference speech today. Does he have a plan to turn things around, and what can we expect?
I know that one of the key focuses of this speech is going to be sort of a call for unity. And I think he's going to put it very bluntly to the membership that divided parties don't win elections. We've seen across the summer increasing internal criticisms about, for example, the SNP's governing partnership with the Scottish Greens. One SNP MSP, Fergus Ewing, who is very critical of the Greens, describes them as wine bar revolutionaries. That's been a sort of ongoing internal row. Alongside that, though, I think he will be perhaps trying to manage people's expectations ahead of the Holyrood budget, because the Scottish Government's finances are in sort of really straitened circumstances at the moment. It's certainly the case that one of the things on the table is some sort of, you know, a wealth tax. He's talked previously about the need for progressive taxation to make sure that those are who are earning the most are also paying the most. So it will be interesting to see if he goes ahead with that.
Finally, Libby, if the strategy is to focus on things like unity and the cost of living, stuff that is basically anything other than a new referendum, is it a sign that independence, having come so close last time, could now be fading from view for a lot of these activists?
Of course, the SNP is the party of Scottish independence, and that commitment is not going to change for, you know, all of the members and activists that I'm speaking to here in Aberdeen. But the point is what the Scottish electorate feel. And as I've said, I think there is a generation now of people for whom independence sort of feels normal and achievable at some point in the future, but without particular urgency, particularly when people feel that there are sharper issues that need to be dealt with by government and are also excited about the prospect of a UK Labour government dealing with some of those problems in Westminster. But I think it certainly is the case that, you know, there is a inevitable recognition that a referendum is not happening anytime soon.
Libby, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Nisheen.
That was The Guardian's Scotland correspondent, Libby Brooks. To read her reporting from the SNP conference and her interview with Humza Yousaf, do head over to theguardian.com. It's worth remembering that The Guardian is open to anyone who wants to read it, but closed to billionaires wanting to own it. Thanks to our readers and listeners, The Guardian has never been and will not be controlled. To support what we do, you can join millions of others around the world at support.theguardian.com. And that is it for today. I'm Nisheen Iqbal, and this episode was produced by Lucy Hoff and Tom Glasser. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo, and the executive producer was Phil Maynard. We're back again tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
How can a people-first approach to higher education transformation improve success? An EY report suggests that taking emotional and psychological factors into account is just as important as the technology. Six factors drive this human-centered approach: leadership, inspiration, care, empowerment, investment, and collaboration. Get these right, and they can more than double an organization's chance of transformation success. Learn more about people-first transformation at theguardian.com/transforminghighereducation. This message was paid for by EY.